Right now, it's time for our weekly Wisconsin News Roundup, checking in with reporters around the state about the stories they've been covering.
First, residents in Bayfield County had a chance to weigh in this week on two potential routes for a new transmission line. Danielle Kading is a WPR reporter based in Superior. Danny, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, it's a tale of two routes, Danny, from Northern State Power Company. Can you tell us what the options are here?
Yeah, so one route would follow the existing route, which is being called the East Route, and that's about a 19-mile transmission line that would use a double circuit line or two power lines. And then there's this other route called the West Route, which would be a little bit further away from the lakeshore, and it would go kind of west through the back of the peninsula to Bayfield and cross around 26 miles through county forest land along existing roads and use a single circuit line or one power line.
It seems like there's agreement, Danny, that they need something here. This is how people on the peninsula get their power and the old line needs replacing?
Yeah, because parts of the line currently are more than 50 years old. And so XL Energy is saying that this line is needed to strengthen power and increase reliability of service to communities in the area as they've been growing.
You covered a public hearing in Washburn on Tuesday about this. What did people in the community have to say?
Well, people were overwhelmingly in favor. Those who spoke anyway were overwhelmingly in favor of the East Route, the existing route where the power line currently follows. But there are people who have voiced support for the West Route because they feel like adding another line to that current route might be even more of an eyesore. But, you know, that's kind of the concern right now of a majority of the communities across the peninsula. They've all passed resolutions or taken a stand saying that, you know, we would prefer to have the existing route be the way to go because they're concerned about, one, the visible aspect of it, being that the area is a tourist economy. And then they're also worried about the impact that building westward, kind of through more county forest land, would have on their forestry revenues because they make about, I think it was somewhere around $3 to $5 million a year in forestry revenues on their county forests. And so they don't want to lose that acreage through the transmission line if they don't have to.
What's next in this process, Danny?
So, you know, they just had the public hearings and XL still has to obtain a number of local, state, and federal permits. But they are hoping to begin construction of the substations next year and the transmission line in 2021.
Danny, thanks for giving us this update.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Danielle Kading, WPR reporter based in Superior. She talked with us about a public hearing on two proposed routes for a new transmission line on the Bayfield Peninsula. Now, the Ozaukee County Sheriff's Department announced this week that it had solved the murder of 18-year-old Port Washington resident Tracy Hammerberg, who was found dead in 1984. The killer, who police discovered thanks in part to an online genealogy database, himself died in 2012. Dan Benson is a reporter for the Ozaukee Press. Dan, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Rob.
Well, this case 35 years ago, Tracy Hammerberg found in the town of Grafton after being murdered, very disturbing crime. Can you talk about the initial investigation and why it went cold for so long?
Well, the Ozaukee County Sheriff's Department, they were the lead investigative agency. The state DOJ's Division of Criminal Investigation also was involved from the beginning. They felt it was a local man, so they focused on interviews and with people, but nobody had seen her since she had left a party in Port Washington about 12:30 in the morning. And then, so there's about a five-hour lag between the time she left that party and the time her body was found in the driveway of a house in the town of Grafton. So nobody had seen her. There really wasn't anything to go on. The killer they ended up finding, and that whose name Philip J. Cross they released announced just the other day on Tuesday, had just gotten out of prison and had not lived in the area for about 5 years, maybe more than that, about six, maybe 7 years. He was 21 at the time of the killing. So he just was not on their radar.
And so now, 35 years later, genetics helped find him. Can you talk about how police picked up the thread, inspired in part, I understand, by a case in California?
Correct. So over the years, back in the mid-80s, DNA science wasn't too far along, of course. And over the years, they collected DNA samples from over 400 men. It's the largest collection in state history. So basically, they eliminated 400 men as suspects from this case. And one of the detectives who had been involved since 2005, Neil McGrath, with the Department of Criminal Investigation, he had read about the Golden State Killer case, and that there's the FBI in Los Angeles had developed a method of basically reconstructing or constructing a family tree in reverse. So that's what they did with Philip Cross. McGrath had reached out to that the folks in LA, and they jumped in and helped. This was in March, and helped the Ozaukee County Sheriff's Department do that. So they built a family tree for Philip J. Cross, and then they went back down the family tree until they found a family in Port Washington, and that was Cross's family, of course. And it led them to two brothers, one of whom had a criminal record and one of whom did not. The one with the criminal record was Philip Cross. And when they looked him up, they found that he had died of a drug overdose in Milwaukee in 2012. And what's the normal procedure in that case is to do an autopsy. And so they connected with the Milwaukee County Coroner's Office and matched Philip Cross's DNA to the DNA found at the murder scene in 1984. And it was a perfect match. One of the analysts with the state crime lab called it a 1 in 7 trillion chance. So it's a statistical certainty that Philip Cross was the killer of Tracy Hammerberg.
And Dan, as we wrap up, what's been the reaction from authorities and family members now that this has been solved, but clearly the perpetrator won't face justice here?
Yeah, everybody said they had mixed feelings. At least now they have answers, but he never was brought to justice. The Ozaukee County Sheriff Jim Johnson said they wanted to look him in the face and confront him with the evidence against him. Both Cross's and Hammerberg's families are somewhat disjointed, I guess you'd say. So there's not a lot of reaction from the family. I talked to one of Tracy's sisters, and she felt the same way, that it's good to have answers, but they don't feel like there was any real justice. That Cross got to live his life, even as tragic as his was, but Tracy obviously never got to live the life she wanted.
Dan, thanks for sharing the story with us.
Sure. Thanks.
Dan Benson is a reporter for the Ozaukee Press. He talked to us about police solving a 35-year-old murder case in the town of Grafton with the help of an online genealogy website. Now we head to Richland Center, where funds are being raised to repair and restore a warehouse designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. Barry Adams covers regional and business news for the Wisconsin State Journal. Barry, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Good to be here.
Well, can you first tell us a little bit about the A.D. German warehouse and its history?
Yeah, so A.D. German was he had a warehouse that he built in 1912, and he basically supplied mercantile, grocery stores and general stores with supplies, groceries and whatever, flour and eggs and whatever. And so when one of his customers was Frank Lloyd Wright, who was notorious for not paying his bills. And so as the story goes, A.D. German, he needed another warehouse because his business was growing. So he went to Frank Lloyd Wright, who owed him about $25,000 to $30,000, they think. And he had Wright design and build him a warehouse. And so that's how this whole thing kind of came about. Wright designed it, I think it was in 1915, and it was built. It took a while to build it, too, between 1917 in 1921, and this is right near downtown Richland Center, just a block away from the courthouse.
And now, about 100 years later, what state is the building in?
You know, the bones are pretty good with it. The exterior needs a lot of work. Now you got to remember, this is a warehouse, so it's not like an old factory where there's big windows and all this natural light flooding in. There's very few windows on this building. It's made of bricks that were harvested and made right from right behind the property, actually. And this is right, and he built it right next door to the original warehouse that was built in 1912. So overall, you know, it's in pretty good shape, but you know, there's this cement or concrete decorative design that runs on the top, and that's kind of falling apart, so that needs to be replaced and fixed. The first kind of work that they want to do will start next spring, and this is part of a $4 million project. They've raised about $2 million worth of that, including getting a $360,000 Saving America's Treasures grant, and they were only one of 41 organizations, the 80 German Conservancy. They were one of only 41 organizations in the whole country to receive one of these grants this year. So, but anyway, they want to, on the first floor, they want to turn that into kind of an event space, open it up for people who want to have weddings or meetings or what have you. And that's going to take quite a bit of work on that first floor. They want to, of course, fix the outside of the building. And there's talk right now on the rooftop of making that into a rooftop garden of some sort, where maybe you could have a bar or have events up there as well. There's two other main floors, the second and third floor. It's unclear what will happen with them, but they're not going to work on that right now. I should say also the other part of this project, starting this spring, will be also redoing the basement. And there's talk of maybe that'd be a good place for artisans that could age cheese or distilled spirits in the basement of this old warehouse that at one time kind of what it did, it held commodities.
And Barry, as we wrap up, is the hope of this conservancy, the people organizing this rehab, to take this old Frank Lloyd Wright warehouse and make it part of Richland Center's economic and community development?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of it. And, you know, Wright is somebody that he draws. I mean, whenever you talk about Frank Lloyd Wright, there's these fanatics that just adore what he does, and they'll take in everything that he does. And so they're hoping that'll draw people from around the country to take part in this. And I got to share a quick story with you, Rob. One of the fun things about being a reporter is you never know who reads your stuff. And I get a call today, actually, of all things, a woman in Tucson, Arizona. Her name is Heidi Armour, and she is the granddaughter of A.D. German.
No kidding.
And she's 82 years old, and she starts telling me about A.D. German. She sat on Frank Lloyd Wright's lap when she was 6 years old, and she's only one of two of A.D. German's granddaughters that are still around. So
wow.
It was really kind of fun talking with her, and I'm hoping maybe to do a piece on her at some point, maybe the next time I write about the building.
Looking forward to that, Barry. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Okay, thanks, Rob.
That's Barry Adams. He covers regional and business news at the Wisconsin State Journal. He talked with us about a warehouse designed by Frank Lloyd Wright in Richland Center that could be getting some repairs and a new life.